Hey there, Softball Universe, and welcome back to another episode of Softball Diaries. I'm your host, Alex Kliger, here with my co-host, Matthew Bukovitsky.
Hey guys, welcome to
What's up, Buko?
Season 30 of Softball Diaries, the big 3-0 for us. You know.
It's, what's 30th anniversary?
I don't think it's a thing.
Ants.
It's not ants. So this is the first podcast we've done for a very long time. Also joining us in studio is Dan Martino.
Hello, everybody.
How's it going, Dan?
Fabulous.
It's great. We're definitely going to get back to Dan in a second, but Buko, this is our first podcast in many moons. How are you doing?
Good. I'm excited to get back to doing the podcast. It's one of my favorite things that I just sort of couldn't really arrange a time for consistently last season. So
it's true. You know, it's part of growing up is the fact that really realizing what your priorities are. And loyal listeners, you're not it.
Yeah. I mean, my thing was just like, if I'm going to spend my time on stuff, I really want to spend it talking to you, Kliger. Really, iffy. So
yeah, I mean, each podcast takes upwards of 30 hours to produce. So we'd like to thank our sponsor, Stamps.com.
What if we actually get a sponsor? You know, like
we have sponsors. We're just bad at our job.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, this is the first of the 2018 season back at the Schiss. Let's go over a little bit of things that we might have missed. Sports wise, did anything happen in the off season?
Oh, I don't know. Just this little. This little team of underdogs.
Are you talking about Penn State, the NIT champs?
No one is talking about Penn State basketball ever.
They won the NIT. They're the 69th best team of last year.
Yeah, and that's like the best they've ever done, too.
Did Pitt even make the NIT?
Pitt didn't win a single in-conference game. The only team in the entire country not to win a conference game. It was really bad. Shit is bad.
We're pivoting to a shitty college basketball podcast.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, yeah, but
Dan, what's your college basketball team?
I don't have one.
Okay, there you go. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Dan, did you have any interesting off-season surgeries?
None. I've never had a surgery besides my wisdom teeth in my whole life.
Well, I mean, that's a surgery. That counts.
I just wonder if it counts. Were they impacted?
They were apparently growing in totally sideways.
So, yeah.
Is that impacted?
I've always wanted to chew sideways, so...
Yeah,
right.
Wisdom teeth don't make any sense. People just died before they came in. I don't really understand how they exist.
Oh, they're just yeah.
Were our mouths bigger?
We evolved away from eating.
Yeah,
that.
Some people don't get them at all.
Right, my wisdom teeth, my jaw is apparently big enough.
Not a surprise.
Yeah, I got a big mouth. Whatever.
My dad had all of his removed, and then a few years ago, his dentist was like, "You got another one back here," and then he got that one removed. So the question there is. Did he have five, or did the surgeon just like not remove them before?
Or did he grow another one? Never know. Or did they remove one of his molars accidentally? All right, we need to move on.
Yeah. Well, I want to get to your surgery. So, okay. What's this number for you?
This is the third ACL surgery.
Third ACL.
This one was a little different because I had my meniscus tear to go with it, and it's hard to straighten my leg.
Sorry for the technical terms, people, but Buko is getting his... when are you going off to school?
May 30th or 30th, whatever, the last day of May is.
Buko's going to become a certified medical professional, physical therapy, watch out, ATI, or...
I look forward to becoming a doctor in 3 years so I can really, you know... Rub it on all your faces.
Internal medicine, if you know what I mean, right?
It doesn't even make any sense, but sure. Kliger, it says you got surgery.
Got surgery, too.
Which one?
I got eye surgery. Both of my eyes got lasered. Not LASIK, just to correct a ailment that they call narrow angles, and there's really no defending what it is.
Sounds like an emo band.
They definitely made it up, and it was like, I just want to zap this guy's eyes.
Well, I went to the doctor because I get migraines and stuff like that. It's really serious, actually. And then the doctor was like, I wasn't expecting to find this, but you have narrow angles. And I think the reason he wasn't expecting to find it was because it affects like a large population, which I'm not a part of. It's like older people, women, and Asian people. And I'm getting older. But
you're not becoming an Asian.
No, but my mom actually has the same, so it's like hereditary. Although the doctor says that the itself is not hereditary, but he's like, you know, shape of your head and shit like that is. Yeah, anyway, we didn't really have a good ending to the season last year in terms of podcasting. It was a good ending in terms of playing. We still owe some sort of award ceremony. I think we didn't really do it because we really only had a core of 11 or 12 people at the end. Great games. My MVP, Zach Gross.
Yeah, I think so. I think he probably gets the most pissed, would probably feel the most shafted by not having a vote, but we still should have had a vote. I mean,
oh, we should definitely have a vote.
But,
Yeah, politically, nothing has happened in the last 8 months or so, so that is great.
I guess. It's all just going on the same trajectory.
Yeah, okay, so to transition into the game recap, I do want to talk about how we moved fields. So last year, Dan, thanks to you, we were able to move into Sion when the shift was unavailable due to a phantom men's softball league. This year, we, I guess, got our act together enough, or we had enough lead-in time that we were able to return to the shifts. Shout out to Rachel Sanders for calling Pat or Dan or whatever that guy's name is. Who's the guy that runs the shifts?
Maybe Bob. But
it's a new guy.
Whatever. I think the important thing was that we realized that Alex, you and I, we're not really good at like talking to people and making deals.
You're lumping me into yourself.
You can
fucking call somebody sometimes. It's not hard. You talk to people all the time.
I did call people last year. Nobody gave me a positive response. Anyway, Sanders volunteered to like. She's like, I'm good at this shit, and so you let somebody that's good at it handle it. Sorry, Clagger, I don't think you're that good at it. It's fine. Anyway, we're really happy to be back at the Schist because it's a nice field and miss it. And some people, I think, didn't come because they had problems with Sion or thought it was far.
Perceived,
even though it really wasn't
perceived
that
perceived problems. Yeah. It's a great field. Some of it smelled like shit, but, you know, don't we all? It's not like the Schist smells like roses either. Yeah, they painted the back wall, which is interesting.
The batter's eye.
Yeah, it's great. It's like a big green monster out there. Anyway, before we get to the recap, Dan Martino is here, and he is running for the 177th District of PA. He wants to be your rep if you live in a very strange district that's made up of Bridesburg, Port Richmond, Holmesburg. What else is in there?
Mayfair and Frankfurt.
Frankfurt. What about Lawnwurst? Is that one in there?
Lawnwurst is not in there.
Lawnwurst? What the hell? I've never even heard of that.
It's like it's like a Polish sausage, right?
Yeah. It sounds like a Polish sausage for sure.
All right, recap coming at ya. So, Schist Game 1 2018 was a battle of friends. Potentially enemies, potentially, equals, but it's really cool to see Rohan versus Kate in a matchup of tap, dancing, top, whatever.
You see, you don't even know the name of your team.
Fuck you! versus what, Kate was what, the invasion of the body
Snatchers?
They were
actually Revenge of the Body Thatchers.
Revenge of the Body Thatchers, very, very body positive. There's great energy this game. It was a crisp night. Some might say cold. I think crisp.
Yeah, I think it was crisp because it started off nice and it got colder. I mean, that's what happens when the sun goes down. It gets a little cooler out. And, I don't think it became uncomfortable, but it was, like, a bit sweatshirty.
Yeah. The two teams I thought were drafted fairly evenly with, except for one small issue was that the Ted Dansons didn't really have a natural pitching staff.
Yeah.
Which was tough. But yeah, the Cates, the Body Thatchers, struck first.
Yeah.
What, they were up 2-0 or something like that?
Well, just to give you a Kate, I'm not going to say exactly where she was drafted, but Kate drafted Stephanie like very early in the draft, specifically because she didn't want to bat against her. She doesn't like batting against Steph. So it was a very interesting strategy. Kate really deciding, I don't want to bat against these specific people, so she picked them. Thought it was very interesting. Body Thatchers went up early. It looked like it was going to be a low-scoring affair. Defense started off really strong. I was surprised because you kind of think, like, first game back, there's going to be some rust on those gloves and stuff like that. But people actually started off fielding really well.
I felt quite rusty.
Yeah. I mean, my arm, like, I only, like, warmed up and my arm felt, like, pretty rough the next day. Like, I felt it.
What about you, Dan? Did you feel rusty at all out there?
I forgot rules.
Yeah, you did. That's you certainly true. Did.
But I'm also living in two different centuries when it comes to rules.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah,
which is oftentimes an excuse for me just not remembering.
I know. Yeah. Our rules resemble like modern baseball. Yeah. So like,
it was all, you know, first game jitters. I was just excited to run. You know.
Yeah, we're definitely going to circle back to that. yeah. So let's see. Zach hit a few batters, which was interesting.
Yeah, he got Thatcher right on the knee. That it made a like hollow sound. So I wasn't. I thought like thigh, but he was like no, right on the knee, and I was like, oh,
that fucking sucks.
That's unfortunate.
Welcome back to the. I don't think he played last year, so it's cool to see him back.
Well, I think that's what happens when you get sort of a guy with the release, like sort of the three-quarter release. Against the left handed batter.
Against the lefty, yeah. I think he hit some righties too.
Oh,
he hit Abbott.
He hit Abbott too. And I got another couple close calls.
Abbott, who weighs like 70 pounds.
Yeah, and Dan also almost hit people, but the ball was coming in so slow that it really was okay to get out of the way.
Yeah. So the last full season that we played at the Schiss, before adding in the home run fence, we had, I think, zero home runs. I think that maybe, like, Pete might have hit a home run, or Justin Scherr, like a true home run. But we had somebody hit a home run in our first game. Gross hit a three-run home run, right?
Yeah.
Which is pretty
really
crazy.
Really impressive, just, like, one of those, which is how you're going to have to hit home runs, which is, like, a line drive that just, like, a really well-hit ball. Cause you can't hit one high in the air. Because it will eventually just fall and stay. But, like, you know, hit one right to right center field, and it kept rolling all the way to the wall.
Pretty much. Which really turned the game towards the Tap Dansons.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I feel like he hit it exactly where his spray chart is. So I feel like, you know, a little bit better coaching really could have closed that. But it ended up not mattering because the Tap Dansons gave it up anyway. Let's see. Women. I have this written down. Women be hitting. Steph, Kate, Rachel all got on base multiple times, I feel like.
Yeah.
Big hits.
Everyone did at least.
Rachel and Kate being the engines of destruction for their team.
Yeah, well, they really did take advantage of, I'll say, over-aggressive field placement by Zach Gross, who really was like very...
Me too. I played super in on Rachel's first hit, which...
I don't know why you play in on Rachel. Rachel can hit the ball.
Like, I play in because she hits lasers that get through the third base, and I want to be able
to cut it off into one spot.
Try to throw her out first because I've got a monster arm. Yeah, and let's see. Zach was pitching to Zach. I think were the bases loaded?
The bases were loaded. If you're referring to the interference play.
Yeah, Crone hit a little cue shot, which is a great, great, really lyrical descriptive term that you used, Buko. Back to Gross. Gross tagged him, and Crone threw his hat at him. There were multiple.
I'm not really sure what the order was of stuff, but like,
I don't know.
Zach also started like running weirdly up the line. Like, he wasn't running directly to first base. He started running at Zach. He threw his hat at him, which really left me no choice but to call interference.
Definitely a controversial call because we don't really call out interference like that. But I think totally apt. It's really a shame to see, but didn't really break up the flow of the game too badly. No one really seemed to argue it too badly.
Oh, Zach certainly did.
Well. That makes sense. I would argue the same thing if I was him.
Yeah.
So the game started really unraveling with Dan Martino's mental errors. Let's see,
wow.
Dan.
Wow, really put the blame on you. I think that there was actually some fielding errors that might have contributed.
Maybe. That was when the game officially got out of control.
Okay. So you're saying it started.
Yeah, so Dan, I think that you got doubled off on first with a really routine pop-up. Is that not the way they play in pre-Civil War era baseball?
I can't remember
what. So depending on how it, you know, where it lands, a lot of times you can catch the ball off of a bounce. And so... In old
times, but you can still run with the bounce.
Yeah. So right.
So
if it bounces once, you can take off. So me being generally younger and more spry than some of my older teammates on the old timey baseball team, they're more likely to take the hop, which is why I usually just go for it. But you know, playing with younger people that know how to field, things change quickly.
Also, gloves help.
Gloves are tremendous.
You also do have a weird thing about, like, why do you, when the ball's like. You're playing first base. Which you play first. You know what? We'll talk about this later.
Yeah. And then also, there was not two outs. You were on second. It was not a force, but you went to third and got out, I think, on something else, which was...
I think you wound up having to overrun.
Yeah, which was not as bad of a mental error, but still classified
it's
as
mostly
one.
Just me being aggressive, yeah. B, being aggressive.
There was a lot of, like, very close, like, like, the game almost ended with Evan trying to take second base on, like, a normal single, and it almost cost his team the game, which was kind of
interesting. Yeah, so in the bottom of the fifth, at this point, the Danzigs, the Dawson Danzigs were up, it was a fifth, fourth.
This is the top of the seventh.
Whatever.
The Danzigs were up. 9-4.
We're up, but yeah, and it felt like the game was fucking over. We brought in our closer, who is also named Dan Martino, kind of a series of infield outfield errors.
I have to say,
miscommunications. Capped with couple big shots, and anyway, we were down by one run at the end of that, and then we lost.
It was a classic rally.
I just want to say, it was very, I mean, the first two batters got out, which really made, like,
I didn't even realize it was fucking two outs for all this shit.
Well, it was, the first two batters.
I'm over it, though.
Thatcher got walked, and then a double play on a line drive, so it's two outs.
Beautiful.
Two outs with, like, you know, up four runs. I really do think Noah's triple really, like, helped everybody get a little confidence. Let's not forget Celine Dion came on.
Right.
Buoyed people. They forgot about, like, we need lots of things to happen.
Well, it really cut the tension, I think.
It really did cut the tension.
And when people aren't tense, they play better.
Yeah, in general. Yeah, for sure. And then I really thought, the bases were loaded for Kate with two outs down a run. And I think everyone on her team really wanted her to, like, try and take a walk from Dan, who was little wild, but she just hit the ball over Zach Gross's head, and it was great. And then I think Siebel tried to force a throw to second to try and get a tag out because he was in, or a force out because he was, like, in really far. Mm-hmm. But then the ball got away and people came around to score.
Yeah, I think it was Evan probably was on first, and that guy's not even sneaky fast. He's just fast, and aggressive.
It was probably a very disappointing result for the tap dancing.
You know, I'm glad to let the Bobby Thatchers back in the game, you know, have a little bit of fun in the first game. A blowout's not fun.
But you guys were also, you had a very good chance to, like, come back and win the game. You had the bases loaded.
Did we?
Yeah, it was, I mean, I think the big play was Bennett got a big single with the runners on first and second, but Erica maybe more aggressively could have taken home, but I think you don't want to be the last out at home either. So,
Yeah,
bases loaded.
Yeah, we should have had a third base coach there. It's really tough in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
Good conservative base running. Yeah, final score, what, 10-9?
10-9.
Opening day classic.
Really good game. A lot of fun for the neutral perspective, or for the umpire's perspective, whatever I was. I really had a good time with that game.
Yeah. Were there any, I guess the Australian dude, was that his first game?
That was our only first gamer, I think. But, I mean, we had
his name? Sydney Dingo? Damn it.
Terrible. All right. Todd. His name's Todd.
I think his name's Todd.
Oh, it's Todd?
Pad?
Something, it goes up at the end.
Dan, try one.
Todd.
No,
it goes up at the end. Like,
what are you from, Adelaide?
Todd,
is that an Australian city, Adelaide?
I think so.
Do you think
Todd? Yeah, sure, that's fine.
Yeah.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he did. He said that he played softball growing up, so I don't know.
Okay, coming up is the interview with your next president, Dan Martino.
Governor Jerry Brown, IRS smiles and never frown. Soon I will be president. Out of power, I'll sink away. I will be fearer one day. I will command all of you. If it's all
All right, if you're listening to this at the gym, definitely, fuck, whatever. Okay, I was going to say something about applauding quietly to yourself, but I just
can't. No, cheer out loud. Say his name.
Can't think about anything funny. So Dan Martino live in studio at Home Base Studios East B2, or East, I don't know which studio this is. Anyway, so Dan is running for the 177th District of Pennsylvania. There's somehow even...
The state rep. For
state rep. So there's fucking 203, like, districts in this beautiful Commonwealth of ours, apparently. Right?
202.
What? Then how are there 200... Okay, okay. So to prep for this interview, I Googled literally how does the Pennsylvania government work. The first autocomplete was how does the Pennsylvania Turnpike work. So people care more about the Turnpike for sure. But I thought,
do you not know how a Turnpike works?
I don't know.
I know that's something you need to like look up.
I mean, how do, if I pay my taxes, Dan, why do I have to pay for the Turnpike?
Because it's
I mean, it's like a usage fee.
Yeah.
You guys suck.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's pretty common toll plaza thing. Okay. But it does suck, I do have to say. It's really expensive to go to Pittsburgh. Like, the whole point is to, like, get from Philly to Pittsburgh quickly.
It's confusing sometimes if you get off at the wrong exit, then there's, like, the whole ticketing issue. Yeah. I've done that a lot. I've driven a lot of miles and oftentimes taken wrong turns.
I was on the Turnpike recently, and I saw a car getting pulled over by the cops, and I'm like, you're breaking an unwritten rule here. It's like, we pay for this, we can go as fast as we want.
Right.
I my biggest problem is that if you drive from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh, it's like $40. Like, it's a lot.
It used to take like 8 hours, though.
Yeah, but that's besides the point. It's just
you can probably still take 80. Is 80 a free one? Whatever.
It would take a lot longer.
Okay. So for those of you listening at home, Pennsylvania is a bicameral system. I didn't know this. I mean, I figured...
Bicameral legislature.
Whatever, dude. Yeah, because there is the executive and judicial branch. Does Tom Wolf an executive? Does that count? I guess that counts.
Yeah, the governor is the executive.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, who knows about the fucking state senators? Like, I don't even know any state senators.
Yeah, and less important than national senators.
Reps are a little bit more common just because they have more of a local presence,
yeah,
I feel like.
Yeah, on the street.
But, so, in addition to the bicameral legislative, executive, judicial, there's also... the local government system, which is counties, townships, boroughs, cities, and school districts, all have their own fucking government, which is broken up into 67 counties.
This is really US Gov 101.
67 right counties here. And 2,562 municipalities. So my first question is, why do you want to do this to yourself?
I really don't have an answer for that. It's one of those things where it just seems like, you know, everything's fucked up, and I feel like... we need to unfuck it up, and I guess I can kind of take some of the abuse that I've been doled out to for months and years now, so maybe I can handle going to the Hill and getting yelled at by people who fundamentally disagree with everything that I stand for. You know, I guess I'm good at mitigating arguments.
So you got involved just because you saw that... Pennsylvania's not, or the whole nation's not heading in a great direction, and you decided if you throw your hat in the ring that maybe you can improve it?
Right. I mean, I'm not going there as like, you know, to like crash through the wall and change things or do things my way. It's mostly
good,
because
that's not
going
to happen.
Of course. No, I'm going to get a basement office.
The junior rep from Philadelphia.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, you got to start somewhere.
Exactly. And if right now the legislature is heavily tilted Republican, and I feel like even just to get like... a balance would be better.
Sure.
Yeah, and what is it, 177th, or what is it? Yeah, 177th is a pretty big, I guess, got to be a swing one. So we'll go back to that. So is this currently your full-time job? Is it going to be your full-time job if you win the primary? Is it definitely going to be your full-time job if you win the seat? Like, what's going on with that?
So it is not my full-time job right now, which makes it extraordinarily difficult because it is essentially a full-time job to run a race, but I was not able to quit my day job to do so, so I have to wake up extra early, get my day job stuff done, and then, you know, in the afternoon kind of switch gears into state rep race mode. If I win the primary, then I don't know that I'll quit my day job still. Maybe, I don't know, it's hard to say. But if I do win, then yeah, I mean, it would become a thing where every state rep does... constituent services differently. Like, some people would be considered empty suits that don't do a lot for you, and mm-hmm. other people, you know, if you work, if you want to work hard and do a good job, then you know you're working all the time. You know, you're working weekends, you're working holidays, and all that stuff. But most by and large, I think what is 100 days in session, and you know, a day on the Hill is about 5 hours of, you know, committee stuff. So it's, you know, if you want to write laws,
Jesus.
And, you know, make a difference, then it's you work as hard as you want to.
Hmm. Yeah, so I looked up
as long as you're not missing votes, then you're doing fine.
And you can miss a few votes, who really cares? Who's gonna know?
The Democrats.
How long is the term?
2 years.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Yeah. So I looked it up, and PA's reps are the second highest paid in the entire country. 85K a year. It's pretty good, second only to California, because obviously. But do you know which ones are the lowest paid?
No.
It's New Hampshire. They get $100 a year.
Oh, it's very libertarian of them.
Yeah. But even the population of New Hampshire, you probably would have like control over a significant percentage of basically the population of New Hampshire, because the districts are broken up into roughly 60,000 like stratas, right?
Right.
It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. Yeah. The district's enormous. And yeah. It's bigger than you realize even when you look at it on a map.
It looks like a worm or like fungus. It's a weird looking district.
Yeah, it's like a bird. I've heard it, a bird or a like bird. Word bubbles.
A bird or a worm. Those are very different shaped animals. I just want to point that
so
out.
So word bubbles. What's super interesting about this district is there's how many, 10 or 15 districts that are in the city of Philadelphia?
I think so, yeah.
I don't know how many exactly, but there's only two that are Republican.
Correct.
This is one of the ones that was Republican. John Taylor, who first got elected when he was 29, has won 17 straight elections, is deciding to retire, so it's actually an open seat.
Right.
Super interesting, because in terms of flipping the state house, this is a very, very big, like, semi-national election, I would think.
Oh, yeah, a lot, you know, people are watching this on a national level. I mean, John's been around for, like you said, 30 years.
He's the old. He's tied for the oldest in the Philadelphia state
reps. I mean, you
said reps.
17 consecutive, but like for the most part, state reps, like the incumbent win almost every single election.
Yeah.
So like the fact that it's an open seat means that it's actually like up for grabs as opposed to like heavily weighted.
Yes. Yeah. Do you know why he's not seeking re-election?
He had a grandson, and I think, you know, he's paid his dues, and I think.
That's interesting. I don't know. I mean, he said family. I think that the district is changing and has been pretty consistently
I'm sure that's
changing.
Part of
so
it.
I
and,
feel
and
like,
also, like
he's not in it for a more more competitive race.
Last cycle, Joe Hohenstein, who's running again, came within 9 or 10 points of beating him, and I think maybe John saw the writing on the wall, and instead of, you know, going through another bloody battle, he decided to hang it up, and he retires a hero.
A hero.
People love him.
I was curious about what your relationship or was with him or what your take is.
John was and remains one of the few politicians in the city that would sit down and speak to me about the issues I thought were important. So I have a lot of respect for him. You know, we differ on a lot of issues, but for constituent services, he's unmatched.
Yeah, even though he's a Republican, he was registered as a Democrat before he got elected, but this is a long time ago, and I don't know anything about him.
The district's interesting because, you know, for him to be a Republican in Philadelphia, but he, you know, on the Hill, he's a socialist. You know, from Philadelphia, we don't get a lot of support from Harrisburg. So he's been in office this long just because, you know, he's present and he cares. You know, he brings money back to the district.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Efficiency and progress is ours once more. Now that we have the neutron bomb. It's nice and quick and clean and gets things done. Away with the sense and enemy, but no less valued a property. The sense in war, but perfect sense at home. Down on a brand new day, no more will they tax the pay. It's like the Salem's gonna be flashing a light.
Okay, so let's talk about the other candidates in the primary. It's interesting, so I feel like this also goes in line with my idea that the district, that the demographics are shifting like
big time.
To Demo- because the Republican, there's only one Republican running, Patty Kozlowski. Don't know anything about her, but it's interesting because the Democrats, there's, on any given day, there's between 4 and 7 people running. I think some of them have dropped out.
Right.
But
there's
so
four of us.
We got Margaret Borsky.
Maggie Borsky.
Okay, whatever. She's the daughter of a senator or something like that. She's only 24, right? Which is pretty
She's
cool.
25.
Because you need to be 25 by the time inauguration or some shit like that. It's the youngest you can be.
I didn't know that, but yeah, she's young.
Yeah. Joseph Hofstein, who he's the
Hohenstein.
Guy. whatever.
Right?
Hohenstein.
Hohenstein. Okay.
We're not gonna dignify, but yeah. So he ran. He ran in 2016. He got 44, almost 45% of the vote to the incumbent. So I feel like is he gonna be the favorite going in?
I mean, he definitely has a broad swath of support. You know, a lot of people know him already because he ran. This race still doesn't have a runaway favorite. The other candidates have a hell of a lot more money than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really anyone's game still. It's with the state rep race, it's all about knocking doors and making an impression on people and, you know, putting your time in. I wouldn't be running if I wasn't already part of the neighborhood and doing civic association stuff and trying to solve some problems locally. You know, I didn't wake up one day and was like, you know what, I should just run for state rep. That seems like a really cool thing to do because it's
not
been a monster. it's been a monster's pain in the ass, but...
Yeah, and the final candidate is this guy, Sean Kilkenny, which literally just looks like some dude if you Google what Philadelphia...
Some dude?
He looks like some... If you Google, like, Northeast Philadelphia man, he just looks like that dude. He used to own this bar named Casper's, which had racist t-shirts and, like, a lot of underages, but that was, like, 8 years ago, so who knows? I'm sure he's a fine guy.
He's cool. I mean, I don't talk to these people... Very often, I see them sometimes at political events, and we keep it casual. You know, there's not a lot of mudslinging.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I'm wondering. Like, there hasn't been any, as far as I know, any sort of polling commission or anything like that. I don't know if that's even common at the state rep level, but I don't even know what, like, it would be about. So, like, in terms of a realistic shot for you, like, is there actually a realistic shot of you winning this primary and then going forward in the fall?
When people ask me that question, I usually tell them that if I win, it would be international news. Because I'm going up again the daughter of a congressman, a guy, Kilkenny, who has hundreds of thousands of dollars in union money, and Joe Hohenstein, who ran a whole cycle and has all the name recognition you could ever want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just some dude from Philly who did some cool work in the neighborhood, and my neighbors said, you know, take your shot. I have nothing to lose.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the blueprint for winning is talking about the issues, and your issues resonate with residents, but it has to do with the fact that, like, are you getting maximum exposure there? Is maximum exposure even possible? Like, it's, like, especially a primary, I don't know what the turnout's going to be, but it was, like, in 2016, it was, like, 25,000 people that showed up. I imagine it'll be even more depressed this time, so votes definitely count. And I feel like your platform is one that speaks to local issues. Your first one being, like, you're going to clean shit up, which is, like, yeah, I don't have much to say about that. That sounds great. You've done that in the past. You've organized cleanups. I appreciate it. I live in the area that covers that. I don't think I live in the 177th, but I do like the monthly sweeps or whatever you do.
Yeah.
I use the camera system, which is part of the Old Richmond Town Watch, which I guess you figured out a grant how to do that.
Right.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's been remarkably effective.
Yeah, they, like, sort of see in the dark, not as good as I'd like, but...
Well, yeah, you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I have a question. Since, you know, running for office, it opens you up to criticism, people looking at you. Has there been some criticism of you that you weren't expecting to get, and, like, how have you handled that sort of stuff?
No, I mean, I will get static because I'm a Democrat, just because, like, you know, Democrats, especially in the 177th, tend to get static because they're not John Taylor, and City Hall has made some questionable decisions recently.
Mm.
But personally, like, I, you know, I've never been arrested. I've never been, like, a vagrant or a crazy person. Like, I don't even know what to say. It's like, I haven't really done a lot of fucked up shit
that would be
anything worth printing about.
You know? But I even know, like, a lot of things come down to, like, you need endorsements from, like, groups, and, like,
yeah,
a lot of them, or even the Democratic leading ones, they have to pick in between, you know, four of you. So, like, stuff can leave you up to, like, some weird
stuff. Yeah, I was at a disadvantage from the jump because, again, I don't have, you know, the connections for a lot of these high-dollar endorsements.
Mm-hmm.
From the get-go. So I knew that going in, that it wasn't going to be a walk in the park. And,
mm-hmm,
you know, I didn't think it was a wall. I thought it was just a very tall hill.
Yeah.
More or less, you know. But yeah, it was just one of those simple things where it's like, all right, John Taylor, who's been great for the neighborhood, has done a lot of really great things, a lot of constituent services, and that's sort of what I've been doing locally as well. So when he was announcing his retirement, people were like, hey, you know, this is a really great opportunity for you to go for it. I was also a bit of a disadvantage because of where I live. I walked here, and you're in the 175th.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a lot of people I know are just like just outside of the district.
Yeah.
You know, so you're it's beneficial for some for a candidate to live sort of in like the geographic center of the district, because then you can maximize the amount of people who you have worked with.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you don't know anybody.
Yeah, you don't live within Lawnwurst.
Yeah.
Liverwurst.
Okay, so your second big campaign part of your stump speech is solutions for the opioid epidemic.
Correct.
So definitely fraught with a lot of loaded stuff on both sides here. I'm wondering if you could distill that down to just like a 30-second kind of thing in terms of what ideas you bring and how you're going to be able to be effective with them, and then I'm probably going to be pretty critical.
Sure. You know, having worked with a lot of the people that are dealing with the opioid crisis on the front lines, what I hear over and over again is the lack of universal treatment options mm-hmm. for people who need it or want it. You know, there's a very small window of time typically for someone who's dealing with addiction, and when they finally say to somebody like, I'm ready to get help, you really have to jump on that opportunity. And if you don't have insurance, if you don't have the right insurance, some people don't have ID, you know, there's so many hoops you have to jump through to make it work. And those are some of the things that I feel like we can change. You know, we can go to the Hill and try to get universal treatment, at least for addiction services. You know, I'm a big proponent of universal healthcare. I think that any sane and humane nation would offer that, should offer that to their citizens. Mm-hmm. Probably what I get beat up the most on is my advocacy for CUES, previously known as supervised injection facilities. They're called CUES now because that more broadens it up to say, like, you know, this isn't just a place for people to come and shoot up and then, you know, leave. It's mostly a place where people who are using drugs can get off the street or get out of their basement and not die. Because dying, you know, we have an overdose death rate that's the highest in the nation, of the city. They just actually released the report last week. We had 1,217 people overdose in the city of Philadelphia. It's not just people that are homeless living under bridges and stealing shit. It's sons and daughters, husbands and wives, you know, people, everybody I've known who has died, or not everybody, but many of the people I've known who have died of overdose, died in their parents' house, you know, or died in their own homes, or in a bathroom, or in a basement somewhere, you know.
Yeah, so with the CUES, I wonder how you're going to build a coalition. Talking to one of the reps that knocked on my door, I forget what her name is like DD was her initials or something like that?
Yeah, Debbie Derrick.
Yeah, I talked to her, she was very nice. I'm probably going to vote for her because she talked to me. But she's lived in the area all her life. She's been affected by the opioid epidemic. She is against CUES, even mobile versions of them. So I'm just wondering, like, if somebody who demographically is very similar, you guys are, you know, right next to each other, you're going to have to work with her, especially dealing with the fact that we're basically ground zero in the entire country, if not world, for this type of thing. So how does it get a chance of working in Harrisburg?
Well, being an advocate for it, I've had to kind of sharpen my pencil for people who are on the right of the issue. You know, it's easier for me talking to people on the left who, you know, I don't have to convince them that, like, saving lives is important.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking to somebody on the right, they'll tell you, like, well, I don't want my tax dollars to pay for it. And I say, me neither. That's why we should do this, because they actually save taxpayer dollars. There was a study out of Baltimore that said a single CUES in the city of Baltimore would actually save $6 million.
Yeah.
We could talk about, you know, if we have fewer needles in the street. I don't know if you guys see that very much around here, but, like, I've walked outside of my house and there's needles on the street, there's Suboxone wrappers, there's people. I don't like the idea either, and I wish we didn't have to have it, but objective reality exists.
Mm-hmm.
And unless somebody has a better solution that will immediately reduce the amount of people that are dipping out and dying in the city, I'm all for it. I feel like there are a million roads that lead to addiction, and there are probably a million roads out, and I think we should explore every one of them. And if CUES don't work, then we'll try something else.
Yeah, that sounds great.
As somebody who had somebody die in their basement of opioid addiction, I'd rather not have that happen.
Yeah, and so are the CUES going to be, like, in ideally mobile sites or permanent locations? I'm just curious. I feel like the mobile sites are a little bit easier to swallow for the
people neighborhood. People aren't going to want safe addiction or safe injection sites next to their house.
Right. Well, this is the big worry is the NIMBY people who don't want it in their backyard.
It's crazy, right?
In all likelihood, the pilot program will be a mobile site, maybe an RV. I would like to long-term push for them to be in hospitals or at least on a hospital's campus, because if you walk down the street, most people walking down the street, if you encountered somebody who's addicted to drugs and they say, help me, I'm ready to get help, most people wouldn't even know where to tell them to go.
No idea.
And yeah. It could just be as easy as saying, you know, go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And at Q's, they offer, you know, any, you know, carte blanche treatment. It's like, if you want treatment or detox, or housing, job placement, wound care, counseling. You know, a lot of these people experienced a tremendous amount of trauma. Perfect example of that is before they raised the camp, El Campamento, mm-hmm. I was down there and I spoke to somebody who was an Iraq war vet. And he was, you know, shooting heroin into his hands. And he was basically explaining, he's like, I have PTSD. I can't unsee the things I've seen and I need help and I can't get it. And that might have a lot to do with the fact that our country has a for-profit healthcare system, you know. Mm-hmm. So all these things are connected, you know, like I don't think we do a good enough job of educating people. I don't think we do a good enough job of ensuring that people have jobs coming out of college. And that leads to situations where people don't feel like they have a place in the world. And sometimes those bad feelings lead to addiction because it's that temporary feeling of feeling better about yourself, you know. And a lot of people start taking perks or oxys, you know, at a party, and that turns into a deeper addiction, which ultimately turns into a heroin addiction, which sometimes turns into a fentanyl addiction. And now fentanyl is killing people, you know, at alarming rates. If you look at a chart, it's just like practically a vertical line in the number of people who are dying of fentanyl.
Yeah, fentanyl is really scary. I mean, like, it's all, but like the fentanyl stuff is kind of, it really terrifies me.
Yeah. It terrifies me too, because the issue is now is that, you know, it used to be where heroin had to be smuggled in, and it was easy to smuggle heroin because you don't need a lot of it to get high. You know, it's not like you have bricks of marijuana or some other drug. Now, with fentanyl, I mean, you can produce it in your basement, you know, so it's a homegrown drug that is becoming more and more prevalent every day. And it's so deadly that, like, even just, like, if you don't have any kind of tolerance, like, ingesting a smallest little bit can kill you. Like, mm-hmm. My sister's boyfriend swallowed a fentanyl patch and died in a friend's basement 4 years ago. And this was before people knew about fentanyl. So, it's just one of those things where it gets worse. It gets worse every day, and we breathlessly talk about the problem, but we don't talk about or implement solutions. And that's what I'm all about, is finding solutions.
Yeah, I mean, your passion definitely comes through, and your ability to articulate what could be a feasible solution is definitely important here. Because again, just talking about the problem isn't going to do enough.
I mean,
done enough. It's
getting worse.
It was an extension of my work with the Town Watch. You know, like, we were dealing with a lot of break-ins. You know, a lot of cars being broken into and burglaries. And I was like, all right, we have a problem. What's going on here? We're right on the front lines of this massive opioid epidemic. These people need a way to fund their problem. So how can we, instead of being reactive to crime, be proactive? So we did the Safe Street program that you applied for. And I looked into how other countries had dealt with their drug problems. Because the United States apparently consumes 95% of the world's opioids. Which kills me, because, you know, if you talk to the DEA, they kind of throw their hands up. It's like, oh, we can't do anything about this. Like, well, how is it that every other country on earth has figured this out and we haven't?
Well, yeah.
They have other problems.
It's not the only issue that just, like,
It's also endorsed by the American Medical Association, which I think is an important thing to know, because it's the largest group of doctors and nurses in the country.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
You know, so there are a lot of people who's like, oh, no nurse, whatever, you know, work at a place like this, and I was like, there are nurses lining up to do it. You know, in fact, it's not impossible that nurses might be the first people to open one of these.
Yeah, and without being able to flip the house at the state level, I feel like almost all this is a non-starter, which makes this, that your district that you're running in, super important, key to a lot of things.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it affects everybody. You know, they're dealing with the same issues in Allegheny County and York County. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter who you voted for. You know, a lot of these legislators and senators in the country are having kids who are dealing with the same problems and dying as well. You know?
I just, like, you can turn on, like, almost any TV around here, and, like, there's a lot of those big money commercials from New Jersey about, like, seeking addiction help and stuff, so... I mean, they at least got some sort of government-funded thing about it. I don't know what their deal is. I haven't really looked into it, but...
Governor Christie's initiative, because he had that long story about his buddy who died. I actually don't know if that's even still happening anymore.
They still get the commercials.
Right.
Who knows?
I know the governor of New Jersey is pushing for legalization of marijuana, which in the states that have legalized marijuana, there's been a significant decrease in opioid use, which is pretty promising, in my opinion.
Yeah, I heard PA is in the early stages of considering what it would take to do it, which seems like really bizarre that they're even thinking about it. But I guess if there are
marijuana dispensaries already in Philadelphia.
But legalization for everybody. But I guess every
state should do it. You can make so much money off taxing that shit.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue against it. I'm just saying, like, in terms of the conservative and the current composition of the state legislature, it seems impossible. But I guess if we flip.
They need to answer why marijuana is illegal. Why is marijuana illegal?
Racism?
Jazz.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to flip people's opinion about this stuff.
Right. Well, also, too, is like dealing with what we're dealing with now. It's like you have to first admit that there's a problem and that the solutions that we've tried to implement over the past 100 years haven't worked. And that takes a lot of guts to say, like, you know, the war on drugs has been a failure.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to admit that because it's destroyed millions of lives. You know, like you hear a lot about the people who were affected by the crack epidemic and how many people were thrown in jail for that stuff. And the people, the families of those people are right to be mad as hell about this. Especially, you know, they're talking about now. It's like, oh, you know, now that white people are dying, everyone seems to care.
It's not even that. It's affluent white people.
But the factors, it's like 10x of the people that are affected, and the deaths are much higher even when they were in like the throes.
But it's also, it doesn't serve anyone to, like, you know, we have a problem. We've certainly fucked up in the past. We all realize that. We admit it. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't work to make it better.
I agree. I mean, whataboutism just doesn't really matter here at all.
The landlord's here to visit. Their glass and disco down below. Says I'm doubling the rent, 'cause our building's condemned. You're gonna help to buy City Hall. Oh, we can. You know we can. Oh, we can.
All right, so, you know, in terms of modeling who you are as a person, all that stuff, do you have a hero that's somebody that is not related to you? If you just say your grandpa or great-grandpa, that I will be disappointed.
Bobby Kennedy.
Wow. Why? Why?
Because he was very good at communicating with people. I was especially drawn to his, Tiny Ripple of Hope speech that's really worth listening to. And he also, when Martin Luther King was assassinated, I don't remember where Robert Kennedy was specifically. It might have been like Indianapolis, but like every other major city in the country like had riots, and Bobby Kennedy, who gave like an impromptu speech to the people, he like announced that, you know, Martin Luther King was assassinated, and what he had said to the people that night actually managed to like quell their anger, which I thought was incredible, because we need leaders that are able to communicate with everybody. You know, all these dog whistles and otherisms and tearing people apart is exactly what's wrong with this country right now. And I feel like, personally, it's important to me to be able to speak to both sides without screaming. We have to listen to each other again. You know, it can't just be like, you know, I don't want to go to the Hill and somebody say, oh, you're a Democrat from Philly, go fuck yourself. We don't care what you have to say. It's like, that's not how we find solutions to problems.
Yeah, this isn't New Jersey.
That's gridlock.
Cool. So how has your relationship with the press been? Has there been any sort of press? Is there interest in this? Does local politics get clicks?
Yeah, I mean, so I feel like I've been treated very well by the press. I had actually gotten a fair bit of press leading up to the election, unrelated to the campaign, mostly just because of the advocacy for smarter drug policy and also some of the work we've done in the neighborhood. You know, like the Safe Streets program got a bunch of write-ups. I had an amazing article printed. It was written up by Max Maron. It was in the Philly Weekly. That was basically just saying, like,
Ken... Did you go to high school with a Max Maron? Yeah, whatever.
It's basically like, you know, can a progressive opioid platform candidate win an election in the 177th, which I think was well thought out and intelligent. But for the most part, you know, I think because I look like I do, you know, long hair, tattoos, and I don't look like some... I never had political aspirations. And
yeah.
So people assume that I'm just some punk jerk off. And then when I can speak articulately and, you know, bring my, like, you know, clearly state my points and positions, and I think that maybe impresses people, so maybe it's a bit of a trick.
So you lower their expectations. Yeah. That's how you look.
Exactly.
Do you have any skeletons in your past that you haven't gotten drudged up yet but you're worried about?
No. Which is very fortunate because I've been a pretty good person.
I like my candidates controversial.
Yeah, it's more fun.
Yeah.
If there is something, then I don't know about it yet. You know, it is possible that there's, you know, if you look through all my photos, it's mostly just me playing music and you know, playing baseball.
You're not one of Michael Cohen's secret clients?
I don't know.
So, how have your friends at the 1862 League taken it?
They love it. A lot of support, you know. They're huge politics nerds. And they, you know, we had
big fans of 1862 politics, mostly. Yeah.
Big Abe Lincoln fans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We had that, one of the first,
You would look good as Abe Lincoln with, like, the, you know.
I think so. Yeah. I would do a good Abe Lincoln.
Yeah, I think you would. You got, you're tall enough.
Did you dress up as Abe Lincoln when T.J. Kong did a...
I was George Washington.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, that works, too. You really should have been Abe Lincoln.
Yeah, that's a
missed opportunity. Wasn't my choice. But we had the first... when I announced my campaign, Dave from Everybody Hits, he reached out to me. He's like, oh, man, let's do a, you know, campaign rally. I was like, absolutely. And so we had a lot of the guys from the baseball, actually both baseball teams came out, which was cool.
Yeah, I was away. I didn't show up on purpose. I was on vacation or some shit.
Well, you owe me $25.
Yeah. I went to it, but I think Dave should run for office. He's the most universally beloved person I know.
What district? He's in the 181st.
Right? I don't think he should.
That's a big
deal. Because I don't want him to go away from the batting cages. Right. Then what's going to happen?
Right.
So what's your favorite sandwich place in your district?
My favorite sandwich place in my district.
Serves Lawnwurst, maybe.
I enjoy Memphis Taproom's food very much.
Ooh.
I also really, really, really like... My local haunt is Green Rock.
Green
Rock, they're amazing people. Jamie and Nicole.
Yeah. They only have pierogies there. They have pierogi spots.
They have pierogi week.
Mm. Ooh, pierogi week.
Yeah. But, like, it's about as good as a local bar gets.
Every time Steph drives by, she goes, we need to go there and get some pierogies. it's just sort of like a comical, okay, sure, Steph, but we just never brings it up when it's actually up to eat.
I had my first campaign rally there, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they had my sign in their window.
Mm. Do they know when you come in? Do they like crack your beer? Do they know what beer do they crack?
I drink High Life.
High Life, okay.
Yeah. Man of the people.
I'm a High Life. Sure. High Life man. High Lifer.
All right, Pookie, you want to talk about softball now?
I guess.
All right, what type of softball ball is your favorite type of ball to hit?
Well, how about, like, compared to your 1862
I know ball that I really don't like Zach Crone's knuckleball.
Mm. Oh, that's true.
I think it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Whatever Steph throws is pretty awesome.
Ooh.
I guess just like I'm not used to any wild pitches because in old time it typically just comes like straight down the plate at a moderate speed, maybe 40 miles per hour.
Mm.
You know, I suck at fast pitch. I look like a moron.
Yeah.
But that's also just because I've never like trained at that. I never played baseball in high school or college or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, your strike zone has to be like 100 square feet. It's like, it's super easy to call balls and strikes against you because it's probably a strike.
Yeah.
You're very upright.
You called my third strike on me, which I thought was a little low and outside, but hey, I'm a big guy with a big wheelhouse.
Whatever.
Yeah. I forgive you. I don't mind hitting high balls too, like the tomahawk thing. Yeah. I'm cool with that because I can typically, if I hit that well, I can send it clear into the outfield just like, you know, 12 feet over everyone's head. You know, it just kind of like glides over the infield.
Yeah, that's...
Talking to somebody that enjoys a tomahawk hit too.
Get jealous.
I don't like the ball high. I pop out every time.
I don't like them low because then I tend to like pop them up. Just kind of straight, smooth, and in, you know, a little outside is good for me. I can't hit on the inside because of the reach. I tend to hit the ball kind of closer to the
classic Democratic swing.
Yeah, I found out in this last game that you're an aficionado of the noise the ball makes when you hit it. And you're very, like, even though somebody hit, like, a high pop-up, you're like, oh, that was a good hit because it made a loud sound. Like, which makes a better sound, the softball or your 1862 ball?
So the 1864 ball, the 64, longer
64, sorry. We keep saying 62. We're doing a misservice.
When's the Civil War?
65. Well, that's when it ended.
Whatever. It was pre-Civil War. Okay. Balls.
That ball, it's very hard when you start, and then as you play with it, it tends to loosen up a little bit. Oh, so it starts being about as spongy as a softball, and then by the end of the game, it has a little give to it. So it kind of, by the end of it, I guess that feels more like an avocado. Mm.
So it doesn't make as good of a noise.
Right. So the best hits are usually early on the game.
Oh, okay. For the noise, you like it.
For the old-timey games. Okay. Yeah. But
ours get spongy too.
Yeah.
Right, they're good balls though.
So hard to find like a Major League Baseball regulation ball?
I don't think the problem is the balls. The problem is the bats that we use. We're not using softball ball bats, right?
I'm just saying in general. It's like if I wanted to like go to Dick's and buy a baseball, there's like 400 different kinds, and none of them are Major League Baseball.
Oh, I don't know.
I think they're more expensive because like most of them they just work. I mean, they're all quality, and so they're cheaper.
They're all going to the majors because they use like 400 balls a game.
Yeah, I mean the balls that we use, the good ones that we actually play with, the softballs that we play with, like that are good that don't warp, like they're expensive. They cost a lot of money.
Like what? Like $10 a piece?
No, it's like what's it? Like they're usually $3 or $4 a piece.
No, they're ten. Well, I guess you get like a four. If you get like a. Like 12 balls is like $50.
The balls we use in old time are hand stitched, and those are I think $15 to $20 a piece.
Yes, those. I mean, they're expensive, and I think that's true about the major league balls too. Is that like people will just if you look online for like the best ball, but when you go to Dick's, you're just looking for like the cheapest ball for the most part. Yeah. Like
there's so many different kinds. It's not like in the Sandlot, I guess, when like a ball is a dollar.
Yeah.
Well, a dollar in Sandlot times very expensive.
Sure. That's why they had to, you know, that's somebody hit a home run. They had to
autographs Babe Ruth ball. This one's fine.
So, have you ever played the outfield in our league?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. I still remember.
Yeah, I guess.
Dad doesn't want to talk about
it. I'll play anywhere. I mean, I'm just there to play and have fun. I have a first baseman's glove, which maybe is why I default to first, and I play first in all time.
You look like a first baseman. Yeah, you're just tall.
In theory, you could stretch. Touch second.
Yes, yeah, so that's the question, is that you play first base, and, you know, you'll catch the ball with your glove for the most part, but for some reason, when someone throws low and they're skipping it in, you default to using your bare hand.
It's just my... It's
which
just,
makes no sense.
Well, a lot of times, like, perfect example, the glove throws me off a little bit because... And Rachel, like, hit a ball when I was playing shortstop this last game. And it, like, I went to catch it. I had a glove, but I, like, you know, default to catch it with my bare hand. And I just
because it's your right hand. So, like, when you're bare-handed, you feel more comfortable catching with your right hand?
I'm just used to catching either-handed with bare hands, you know.
I'd say it's a bad habit for
softball. It doesn't serve me, you know. Like, that ball bounced right out of my
especially,
glove.
Especially, yeah. There was like, one that, like, it hit the fence right after, but, like, you reached down to grab it with your bare hand after it skipped off the grass. This, you know, you're just trying to make a big target for the most part, but you do have very large hands, though. That does help.
So will you pledge in your first 100 days in office to introduce legislation to build a stadium in your district?
Absolutely not.
Stadiums are great. They've been proven.
There are like probably a dozen baseball fields in the district. No hospitals, but probably a dozen.
Build a stadium hospital.
Stadiums are unpopular these days.
People love stadiums.
Stadium
public,
stoppers.
Public taxpayer money at work.
What kind of stadium? Baseball stadium? Like a minor league stadium?
It'd be just like nice to have. Yeah, nice to have a little league stadium, just a one with a fence.
Oh, a fence, yeah.
Yeah.
And like a hot dog cannon.
That's, does that come with a stadium? Like, yeah, you buy one stadium, get, like one hot dog gun free? Dog
yeah, the tariffs. Yeah, remove the fucking...
I would love that.
And the criminalization of softball. Also, legalize dogs and Schistler. Can you make that happen?
Is there a law against hot dog cannons? It's possible. I mean, it's a projectile. Potato guns are...
There's no gun laws in the world in the U.S.
Yeah,
you can there are not a lot of sensical ones, but, like, hot dog cannons might fall under, like, not safe.
Do you think you get Tom Wolfe to show up to one of the games?
Hell yeah.
Is he your boss? Is that the way that works?
That's not how that works.
No. My boss is the constituents.
That's 100% true. You definitely, like, the executive is not your boss.
I know. Yeah, you guys serve, you know. Well, but you serve.
Yeah, like, he couldn't fire me, you know, like, yeah. I'm elected.
It's not.
But nobody could fire you.
If this was a parliamentary system, it would be different. But
there's no, you can't get removed from office after being elected unless you commit crimes or whatever, right?
You can get impeached.
Yeah.
But even that's a process.
Yeah, but there's no recall process for people like that. I guess the governor can get recalled. Tom Wolf can get recalled. But that's on the executive. That's a check on the executive. All right. we're going to get into the last three questions. I guess we should have fucking told you this beforehand. But, you know, we're not like CNN. We don't leak questions.
So our only gotcha questions. None of them had to do with politics. They only have to do with softball. Okay.
So if you could design a team logo for yourself or for a team that you played on, what would that logo be?
If I could design a team logo, well, you know how desperately I want a name for this baseball team.
I know.
Ragtag is fun.
It got voted on. You saw the vote.
Yeah,
people wanted to keep Ragtag.
That might be a similar result that you're going to get in this primary, is that just people are afraid of change, very afraid of taking a
Everybody
risk.
Everybody wants progress, and nobody wants change.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted to push that, for I like the semi-athletics was what I went with.
I don't know.
People didn't like it. I'm on the athletics, and we make fun of ourselves already because we're the unathletics. So if I was on the athletics and the semi-athletics, it would just be, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not.
That's really a you
but that's
problem.
Yeah.
I don't know. Booker, you didn't do anything to kind of sell the semi-athletics.
But that's not my job.
I have no history on it.
I want people to actually like vote for which one they liked, as opposed to like which one they like. Not that people would.
But it
vote.
Doesn't make sense.
And if I'm pushing for one that hard,
today.
You're just everyone like fake hates me or does hate me. I can't really tell. And I think if I pushed for something really hard, they would probably push back harder.
I fake
just
hate you.
Just to give me a hard time. I mean, most of the polls I put up there are just like somebody writes in Buko sucks and that winds up getting half the votes.
Buko sucks is a quality team name.
Do you think that Buko sucks might be our team name? Like, I could get that to pass?
Yes,
like,
for sure. I don't know.
The Kensington Buko sucks.
It doesn't need to have a team. I don't like putting
a localization.
Yeah, I mean, we're Philadelphia, sort of. Wait. So did you say a logo?
Oh yeah.
I've always been a big fan of region and name. I was hard campaigning for Kensington Scrappers. I think that's fun.
What would the Scrapper logo look like? Or would it just be like a KS?
Cart.
Sort of.
Yeah.
We could have a shopping cart as our mascot.
I like the Scrappers. Although, I like Scrapple better. The Kensington Scrapple would be funny.
I kind of like the Kensington Scrapple.
Yeah. You didn't vote for it?
No, but because I like Sunday Athletics better than Scrapple.
Sunday Athletics stinks.
This should be the year where we finally come up with a name.
I just want
and
a
if
t-shirt.
It is, if it's
I just want a t-shirt.
Yeah.
That's all I care
about. I think it should just say softball on it, and it should have Buko and I's face.
No.
What if it's softball as an allusion to Schistler? Like a SCH soft. Ball.
I'm fine with Ragtag. I just want to see like a good font.
He's scaring me.
I'm fine with Ragtag. I just want to have a good font to put on it.
Yeah.
Font. I care a lot about.
I hear Ragtag. I think
and
like
colors.
Ann.
What should our colors be like if we had official Ragtag?
Don't care about color.
Black.
It's softball. You don't need to know which person's on your team.
No, but I just. But it's aesthetically like I like having a color.
I don't know.
It's
what's your least favorite color?
Green.
I like green.
You're wearing green right now.
I actually like green a lot. I was just making sure that whatever I said was my least favorite.
I like all colors, actually. I like yellow, I like red.
Yeah, we should definitely
I don't
go
like
puce.
Blue that much.
Puce is a good color for softball. Obviously not.
All right, so if you were to build your own hot dog, what would it be?
I would love to have a brie stuffed hot dog.
Stuffed, so it's inside the hot
it's
dog.
It's inside the hot dog.
Okay.
Wrapped in thick cut bacon on a croissant.
Jesus.
Wow, that is terrible for you.
What's the base protein? Is it pork, beef, vegan?
Vegan?
I don't know. What's the dog?
You can do beef. Beef franks.
Sure. With brie inside. See, I always think like stuffed meat with like cheese is a good idea until you have to bite into it and it's always so much hotter inside of it. Well, if you think
about like a brick of brie versus a brick of American cheese, they're not so dissimilar. You know,
hot, so warm brie rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. No, I love brie. Like baked brie? Baked brie is one of the greatest things
right.
ever.
Or a corn dog. I'm a big corn dog enthusiast. I wish I was eating a corn dog right now.
I've only had a corn dog once, ever.
I'm just okay with corn dogs.
It's fine.
I think I prefer a hot dog. But that's not... But I guess this is Europe. So the Martino dog is a beef hot dog with brie or...
Brie wrapped bacon. So have,
yeah, let's do this.
Or...
Okay.
Stuffed brie.
Uh-huh.
Beef dog wrapped in bacon and then corned.
And then wow. Wow, I like that. That
yeah, is, I'm in.
That...
I could eat one right now.
I hope my mom's not listening. She's a dietitian.
I'm gonna make that happen.
You should. That'd be great.
How do you corn something?
You put it's cornbread. Yeah, right? Yeah, it's batter.
Dip it in batter and deep fry it.
And deep fry it. That would be delicious, and you would definitely die. All right. So last one.
It should probably be American cheese because the only brie kind of comes out of left field.
I'm fine, brie.
It's fine. It's the Martino dog. Yeah, it doesn't have to make sense to anybody.
Doesn't other than make you. Sense.
American cheese.
What? American cheese is great. Shut up, Cody. Took that line down. So what's your walk-up song? I'm sure we asked you this like a couple
we're gonna of get you out of here in this question.
Yeah, this is the last one.
My walk-up song, Hell's Bells is in the mix, and every time that comes on I'm like, man, I wish that was
I don't think it's Hell's Bells. It's For Whom the Bell Tolls. A okay. Metallica song, because I thought that
that was the AC/DC song.
It is
that's Hell's Bells is the AC/DC song, which is not on our playlist. But For Whom the Bell Tolls by Metallica is on our playlist because right. it's commonly a far confused. Superior song.
Hell's Bells is great. It's just like 8 minutes long.
It's not that great of a song. But I'm just really not an AC/DC
fan. I'm a slow mover too, so that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not running up to the plate or anything. You gotta kick the cleats, sure. Spit on your hands.
I agree. I think people should take way more time in between pitches and batters. Let's really drag this thing out.
Yeah. That would be really horrible.
All right, Dan, thanks for being a good sport.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's about it from Home Base Studios. Dan, again, thanks for coming out. You have any sort of final thoughts for us?
Nope.
What can people do to help? What's it, martinoforprez.com or yes. Senate seat?
Martinoforpresident.com. I could use a hand on Election Day, if you guys are so inclined, May 15th.
May 15th.
May 15th is a Tuesday. If anybody wants to hang out and talk to voters on their way into the polls, that would be tremendous.
I'm a strong maybe. I'm thinking about it.
I think I'm still going to be in Europe.
I'm going to be around. Yeah. But I don't... Would I really help you? Would people like want to vote for the people that I'm talking about endorsing? I don't know.
So I thought you were good at talking with people and convincing them about stuff.
I don't really like to talk to people. Like people are going to shamble in.
Just want to get them to vote. That's always the key. It's like you want to push them in the right direction with a name as somebody who worked on sub campaigns. But for the most part, you're just trying to get people to vote and then like leave a name in their head so that like
right.
Martino. But the hardest, the most important thing is like getting people to vote and then giving them a name.
Yeah, people would walk up and say, hey, you give them a sample ballot, which will have everybody all the way from Tom Wolf all the way down to your local committee person, depending on where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll say, vote for these people, they're all right.
Yeah.
That's all. Most people will say, and keep walking.
Cool. What is the website?
MartinoForStateRep.com.
Wow.
That's right. Made it myself.
Makes sense. All right, Buka, anything else? Anything left to say?
No, I don't know when this is going up, but I hope to see you at our next game.
Yeah, let's try to post it before the election.
I'm going to post it tonight. Whatever, guys. I'm not getting paid for this shit either.
Go Sixers.
Thanks.